Welcome to this week's episode of AMI Today. I get a very special opportunity to interview our CEO, one of our founders, Dr. Eric Huntington. He's been with the company from the very beginning, been in healthcare now for a couple decades, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, somewhere around there. So he's got a lot of experience. In this episode, we really want to bring his past, what his philosophy, his beliefs, and his successful actions are from this industry, from his own past, and where he sees the future of healthcare. And with that, we want to get right into it. Eric, where did it all start? What got you going?
Well, thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate the chance to share, I guess, my story, if you will, and my viewpoint with where things are going, you know, with our doctors and with all of our followers. How far back should I go? I can make it short, I can remember the earliest times thinking about what I wanted to do for my future. I can remember driving in the car with my aunt, and I can remember her sister was an attorney, and her family, was various professionals. My parents were both educators or teachers. My mom was an administrator in the high school I went to. My dad was a middle school teacher. And so there was no business background in my immediate family, I can remember sitting in the car, and I remember my aunt asking me what I wanted to do. I think I probably was 13 or something like that, maybe 12. Yeah. And I can remember thinking to myself, I didn't say this out loud, because I think her sister is an attorney, and that was kind of the discussion. I remember thinking, you know, it's sort of interesting. You know, it seems like she does well, financially. Mm-hmm. As an attorney. She seems pretty smart, right? It seems like she has an important job. But I can remember thinking to myself, I remember the conversation also went in the direction of maybe like finance or, Wall Street or something. I grew up in New York, right? Not New York City, but north of New York. And I remember looking at those two things and thinking, well, they seem interesting to some degree. There's interesting points about both of them, but I feel like I want to do something that helps people. I thought that. I don't think I said that out loud at the time. Mm-hmm. And so when I looked at those, and then another thing that came up was doctor. I think that was part of the conversation, and that seemed right to me. It seemed like doctors were supposed to help people. The interesting part was that I didn't have very much experience with doctors. You know, I was a pretty healthy kid. Mm-hmm. My experience with doctors was pretty much, I think sports physicals for school. I think unfortunately the dermatologist probably when I was about 13 or 14 years old because I had acne. But I mean, other than those, I didn't really have any experience with doctors. I got my wisdom teeth out when I was, sixth grade or something like that, and missed my sixth grade field trip. That's what I remember about that. I spent the week taking Vicodin or some kind of major painkiller and sleeping in bed and missed my field trip, which was the worst part of the whole thing. I didn't get to go with my friends. But so early on it was, I started thinking doctor because I thought, there's professional prestige, there's good financial opportunity, all in doing so I get to help people. So I think that's where it kind of started down that line. And then I can remember in high school, I was again thinking, I remember a friend of mine, his name was Frank, was a good friend of mine in high school, and I remember he was thinking, we were talking about what we wanted to do and what we wanted to go to college for, and doctor came up, and that seemed like a great goal to strive for. And so I went to undergrad university, and I majored in biology, and I was doing the pre-med lineup, and I was doing a business minor. I never finished the business minor because I chose some other courses outside that, but I really enjoyed the business courses too that I did do. And the interesting thing was, again, without much experience in medicine, I was going to college at the time with a friend who was there to become a chiropractor. Okay. And he told me about chiropractic. Mm-hmm. And right around the same time, I was playing tennis for the university tennis team. And I was having some shoulder and neck problems following, playing one day. I don't know if it was practice or a match. And one of my teammates said, you should go to my chiropractor. And I had never been to a chiropractor, but I'd heard a little bit about it from the friend of mine I was going to school with. And so I went. Okay. And so in going to the chiropractor, the things I liked about it were, number one, after doing a workup, he took x-rays, he looked at my posture, he did palpation to, find out how my spine was moving, checking my range of motion and stuff like that. And he had me back, I guess, on the next visit, and he went over all the results, explained to me what I was looking at, and then explained a course of treatment, which was all natural sort of stuff, so it was chiropractic adjustments, it was nutrition, it was a heel lift because I had a short leg, it was this, it was that. So that was very interesting to me, right? And I liked the fact that this doctor was both educating, was doing a thorough evaluation, was able to educate me into what he found and what he was going to do based on things that made a lot of sense to me. Yeah. And then provide treatment, which was more natural. That was just, I didn't grow up with medicine in our medicine cabinet, which is, it just, we were a pretty healthy family.
Yeah.
You know, even though I didn't have chiropractic growing up. So that all made sense to me, and that kind of got me on that track, I guess. Interestingly enough, my friend who went for chiropractic school initially ended up going to osteopath school, I think, I think he went to become a DO. So he sort of split the middle, right? Not mainstream medicine, not a chiropractor, but he's kind of right down the middle there as a DO. I'm pretty sure that's what he ended up doing. And I went to chiropractic school and got it out into practice after 4 years of chiro school. I went right into practice, opened my practice from scratch. And I had done a lot of study while in school. I went to the library and got all the practice management tapes out and studied as much business stuff as I could. I went to seminars because I figured in school I'm learning the technical aspect of what I'm doing. And I was doing well. I got good grades in school and was a good adjuster. I said, I need to know how to run a business. I don't have any background in that. My family wasn't in business.
Yeah, had you always planned to go straight out of school and start your own practice?
Always did. Oh, I can remember. My dad is a very conservative guy and, doesn't like to take chances. I can remember him. He must have said to me 100 times, are you sure you don't want to go work for somebody first?
Okay.
Right? And I said, no, Dad, I want to go open my own practice. I mean, I don't think I'm going to learn much working for somebody other than I'll get some experience treating patients.
Did you have a mentor? Did you have something somewhere earlier where you were like, God, I got to go do my own thing?
I did. I mean, I had, a good friend of mine who was already out in practice, he had a practice close to the school I went to, which was New York Chiropractic College. His name was Bob Berry. He's a chiropractor in upstate New York, and I was able to go down and visit his practice on afternoons when I didn't have school, or maybe I skipped, I don't remember.
Whatever.
Probably skipped classes, but was able to actually go and see his practice, and he was a bit of a mentor for me. He was always gracious enough to invite students into his practice, which was amazing. If he's watching this, Bob, thank you very much. That was a big start for me. And then there was, various practice management guys and financial management guys. I'd listen to their tapes. I'd go to their seminars. I mean, there's a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
So I just basically surveyed the lot, if you will. And some I got some great stuff from. Some I thought were, I don't know what to think of this stuff. But soon after I got into practice, I did... hook up with a practice management company, and I started to learn business skills, and combine that with my own experience and other education I got, I started to really understand that I wanted to do, and I don't say this in any way other than to describe my own feelings. I quickly built a fairly successful practice. I mean, we outgrew the space we had. We were seeing 250 patient visits a week in like 900 square feet, and I'm doing rehab and adjustments, and I've got an X-ray facility in there. I mean, it was like,
squashed.
Yes, we were compressed, but I made it work, and I loved all my patients. I'm pretty sure they all, well, at least all the ones that stuck around, really loved me, and I quickly brought an associate doctor in because I somehow got the idea that I wanted to be able to scale a business.
Yeah.
And I realized that as much as I love the individual patient interaction, and that's where, on the chiropractic side of things, obviously that is where, all of the magic happens, if you will. You know what I mean? Like, and the same on the medical side. We'll get into when I integrated the practice, but it was originally chiropractic.
Yeah.
That is where it's that interaction, which is where the patient gets the benefit and the revenue is generated. The whole every aspect of the business of healthcare, right?
Yeah.
But there is so much to it. There's so much more than just the encounter. And I realized that I can either maintain the highest level encounter for however many patients I could see, which was probably going to be somewhere between 200 and maybe 250 patient visits a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which would be a very successful, very beneficial practice for those people.
Yes.
Right? Or I could scale my business, which would require me having doctors work for me. And I could get into the administration and the business management so that I could grow the practice, provide that great level of healthcare through other doctors for larger numbers of people.
Yeah.
Right? Which would help those people achieve their health goals and help me achieve my, my goals for my family financially. Probably more important for me was just the effect that I would create in the communities where my practices would be. And so I went down that path of scaling that practice, and eventually, went to multiples.
Now, was it, I know you had CBP as part of your practice, and that was one of the things you did. Was that right from the get-go? Is that something you encountered during your journey of scaling those practices? When did that occur?
Sure. So chiropractic biophysics was the, you know, name of the technique. You know, yeah. This particular technique focuses on restoring global posture mm-hmm. as the overall goal of therapy. In other words, if a person, a very common postural abnormality, of course, is forward head posture, right? From computers and texting and driving and all the things that we do. And so as a student, I was exposed to a club on campus where this technique was taught and discussed, and I got very involved. I became the vice president of the CBP club on campus, and we brought actually the originator. It was Dr. Don Harrison, mm-hmm. who's just a huge personality, amazing researcher, and somebody I came to love very much. Because of everything he did for. I saw what he did for the students, right, which was amazing. He'd take us all out to dinner, right. He'd do so much to give back to the profession, and this is coming from somebody who's so successful. You know, over 100 peer-reviewed research papers. He had his DC, he had his PhD, and I believe a master's. I don't remember his degrees, but I know he had a master's, a PhD, and his DC. Incredible researcher. His son, Deed Harrison, continues carrying on the tradition along with CBP nonprofit, another number of other doctors who continue their research. It's the most researched technique in the chiropractic profession. Mm-hmm. It's actually through them that I got a bigger vision for what I wanted to accomplish. Because in, I think it was probably like 2005, I was out to dinner with the researchers, with Don, with Deed, and with a bunch of other members of their research team. And I said to Don, what's needed? I'm not a researcher. I'm busy in practice, but I come to your seminars to learn your technique. I promote it as much as I can because it's certainly not the only technique in chiropractic, but it was a great technique for me. And I said, what can we do? What can we do to help the profession? What can I do to help you? Because you've helped me so much. And he probably said something like, "We'll continue to help patients in your practice." And I said, "Well, yes, I'll do that. But what else? What do you need? If you had your wish list, what's on your wish list?" And he said, "You know, I've had this idea to do a comprehensive review of all of the chiropractic literature that's ever been published, not just CBP. I'm talking every single randomized control study, every single case study, everything, every single published piece of literature." And he was working with a friend of his who was, a instructor at Life University, who had started this process of collecting the research. You have to understand, this is a major project. We're talking thousands of papers, right? Not only do you have to find them, right, but you have to review them all. Yeah. So I can remember I called that instructor, and I talked to him, and he said, "Yeah, I've got maybe, I can't remember, but maybe 100 or a couple hundred studies." He said, "But the problem is that if you search for them online, you can only get back to about 1985, mm-hmm. right? Before that, nothing's been scanned into the internet, into the computer, so you can't find them. You actually have to go and pull them out of books somewhere. I mean, like, they're somewhere, right?" So I think in that conversation is when he mentioned that probably the best place to get them would be Palmer College. Mm-hmm. That's the original chiropractic school in Iowa. And that campus probably has, because they have stuff back to the early 1900s. And so I got together with a good friend of mine. He's Dr. Rick Schmidt. He's in Maryland. And we'd been friends for a long time. And I said, "Rick, would you be interested in working with me on this? Look at this project. Look what we could do for the profession." We were both members of the board for the Maryland Chiropractic Association. And we'd been very active with fundraising. We were co-chiropractors of the year for the Maryland Chiropractic Association that year because we had done fundraising for the governor. So I was already starting to expand out from just my practice, my patients, and my personal survival to how do we help the profession, right? And so he said, "Yeah, let's do it." And so Rick and I hired students at Palmer to actually do a hand search of all the literature. And we took it all the way back. We got every single, I'm talking thousands of studies. They would find them, photocopy them, put them in boxes, and send them to Don and Deed, the researchers. Yeah. And so these boxes started to show up. And I can remember Don called me. He goes, I just got a box from Palmer College. I said, Don, I told you I'm going to do this. And he said, this is amazing. So that project took place over many years. And I was able to not only participate in acquiring all the research, but also we would, on certain weekends, we would all fly to Don's house he was in Montana. I can remember I went up there in January. And a friend of mine, Joe Betts, he picked me up at the airport, and I was coming from Maryland. It wasn't anywhere near as cold in Maryland as it was in Montana. And I said, oh my God, Joe, I don't think I brought warm enough clothes. It literally, while we were at Don's house on the mountain, one morning, the truck, the thermometer in the truck said like minus 123. And it was so cold. So we, needless to say, we stayed in the house the entire time reviewing research papers.
Yes.
Except when we'd go out to feed Don's deer. He had about 100 wild deer that were around his property, and you know, he'd put food out for them in the winter. It's a pretty amazing sight. I have video of that, pretty incredible. But what that ended up doing was we ended up on this project that got published by the International Chiropractic Association, Chiropractors Association, and that ended up being the single largest research review in the history of the chiropractic profession. And Don gave me a position on the executive board, along with four other doctors, of that project because of my participation in helping get all the research. And I felt so good about creating that because we finally were able to get all of the data, get it reviewed, and it showed how incredibly beneficial chiropractic was. And it really gave us an ability to combat some of the insurance companies who will often say, you know, six visits, and if the patient doesn't improve, you know, you have to refer them out. I mean, the research just doesn't support that. The research supports much longer care programs, which is consistent with what doctors see in practice. So sure. The research matches what we see clinically, and you know, we're able to then use that to back up why patients need certain amounts of care. And so it was a great foundation for us, because moving forward, we just now have to add all of the research that comes out to this already existing compendium, if you will.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes
so
sense.
That was really those few things that happened early in my career, you know, getting involved with the politics with the Maryland Chiropractic Association and doing the fundraising and helping the Maryland profession, and then being involved with the International Chiropractors Association and doing this research. It really gave me more of a global view. And I went, you know what? For me, what's going to determine, you know, many years from now, right? Maybe when if I slow down at some point in time, which I hope I don't. But if I look back on this and I go, you know, will I feel like I really achieved my goals? It'll be if healthcare for the people of, you know, at least our country, if not the world, is better off than when I found it. And honestly, when I found it, it wasn't in very good shape. So it seems like it should be an easy job, but there's a lot to do.
There's a lot of people.
Yes, there are a lot of people. That's right. And there's a lot of interested parties, some with good motivations, some with questionable motivations. And so all these things get mixed up into a system that is just not necessarily set up for the patient's benefit all of the time. And so really that is my mission, right, in life. Is like where can I create the biggest impact? It is in healthcare, because I've already got a history here, and I've already got communication lines. There's people I know in healthcare. There's things I've done in healthcare that are allowing me to move this forward. And I feel like if I keep all these things aligned towards that goal, then I think I'll be happy professionally. I think my family will be secure financially. I think that the people that I care about hopefully will be able to, you know, have a better experience in life, because healthcare is better off. And that's really what I want to do in my life.
That's awesome. That's amazing. Good. Well, let's circle back a little bit. So you had your first clinic, you were up to 250 patient visits. I'm assuming at the same time you were doing the fundraising, and then you went into your second clinic, you got your associate. Were you doing rehab right from the get-go? Was that something, is that part of CBP in general, or?
It is, yeah. So rehab is part of CBP. It is, it's a specific type of rehab, but you know, just about anything you could see in a low-tech rehab setting is something that might be used under the chiropractic biophysics global umbrella. All the tools that you learn as a chiropractor, you know, would be something you could use within that technique. It's just the overall goal is to restore, you know, overall posture and function. And so, you know, I love the technique because it's very effective, it gets great results, and it's backed up by research. I mean, that's what appealed to me, just my thinking.
Yeah, does that tie in? Is it very similar to a physical therapist? Where does it look like, I mean, if I'd say chiropractic world and then the medical world, where does that tie in? If you're doing, I know there's some chiropractors who just do chiropractic adjustments, right? Works, gets amazing results. You're doing rehab as well. Is that sort of one of the steps that led you along that road to a medically integrated practice? How does that tie in?
It is. There have been some just incredible medical researchers that have participated with the CBP research team, and some of the doctors who have had the most peer-reviewed research papers of all time have been part of that research team. I mean, I think interdisciplinarily, there's been a lot of recognition for what, it maybe even more recognition outside the chiropractic profession for what this team has done. And again, that's just my, you know, most of the doctors I've consulted over the years, they don't use CBP technique. That's not necessary for what we're helping doctors do, but it's just my background. Sure. But I think that really helped me to view things from a more of an interdisciplinary standpoint. The fact that that my technique was working with René Caillé is the person that comes to mind. I mean, you say René Caillé to just about anybody in medicine and they go, yeah, well, of course I know René Caillé. I mean, he's like, you know, he's way up there, you know, and he participated. He's, you know, he was well into his career. I think he might have been in his 80s at the time, but he recognized how incredible this research that was being done by these chiropractors, and so he participated in many of the studies. But nonetheless, so I had that first practice. I mentioned we kind of ran out of space, and so I quickly bought a building with a lot more space and moved my practice over there, continued to expand it. I mean, for chiropractors, this might mean something. For medical professionals, it might not, you know, but in terms of what to compare it to, but my practice, we were probably seeing 600 visits a week. I had three doctors that would work for me. I was in the practice doing more administrative stuff, but I could help with some of the overflow. We probably had 25 staff. That was a single location clinic, and that's a very large chiropractic practice. Yeah. To your point of the physical therapy, we never had physical therapists necessarily working in that practice. We had chiropractic assistants who were helping with the rehab and therapy, and the chiros would manage it. There's licensing in Maryland for that.
Sure.
But we could have very easily had PTs in the practice to do a lot of that work. And I think now, if I was still in practice, I probably would have continued to expand in that direction, because I find that PTs often have an expertise in their particular focus may be a little bit different because of their training and experience from the chiros, and we could have collaborated to do even better work. Would have been great. I didn't get to that point. Before I moved on to other things, I sold those practices. So I had, that one practice was very large. I eventually opened another location about a half hour away from the original location, built that one up, and eventually in the main practice, that's the one when I met Mike Carberry and Colleen Carberry.
Right.
This is going back to maybe 2013 or so. I had been surveying around, through friends I had in the chiropractic profession, and I said, who is it that's doing this medically integrated model the best? Who's doing it right? Mm-hmm. And specifically, Mike and Colleen Carberry's name kept coming up from people I respected.
Nice.
So I eventually reached out to Mike, and after he didn't return my call originally, we eventually got in touch with him. But yes, that's right. So I was able to fly up and see his clinic. I got to meet Mike and Colleen. They're amazing people. Yeah. They've become two of my best friends. And it's not just because I like them. Their motivation, their desire to accomplish goals and to create a great patient experience is like, it's amazing to me. And when I saw their clinic, the very first thing I said to Mike was, Mike, this is amazing. This is the clinic that I would want I would send my family to. This is it right here, this model. I love it. So how can we export this model out to the profession? Because I had already been in the consulting game. I had started that in 2008. Mm-hmm. And I was teaching business management, just teaching people the things that I used to build my practice, but it was all chiropractors.
Right.
I said to Mike, let's actually create a consulting company so that we can take this model that you've created and bring this to the profession. Like, to me, this looked like all the white papers that I had ever seen on the future of medicine talked about collaborative teams.
Yeah.
Well, Mike and Colleen had been doing it since the mid-90s.
Right.
So let's go ahead and do this. So we created AMI, Advanced Medical Integration, where we would help to take this model they had, which was chiropractors and medical doctors and nurse practitioners and rehab specialists and PTs, Colleen's a physical therapist, all working together in the same practice and not just cross-referring. I'm talking everybody, you know, being able to see the patient and coming together in a team meeting to collaborate on what is the best course forward from an interdisciplinary standpoint. Yeah. And that is what I wanted to contribute. I said to Mike, you know, of everything I've done, and I'm so happy with how I've been able to help my community, this is what I want the whole country to have. And so we with a couple other partners, we put together AMI, and you know, at this point, I think we've probably maybe 500 or 600 practices we've helped them install this model across the country.
Good. So let's talk about that. I mean, last 3 years, AMI's hit the Inc. 5000 list. You're the CEO. Yeah. What does that look like, right? What is the first? I mean, AMI's been around for 7 years now. Last 3 years is Inc. 5000. What does that growth look like? What did you guys have to overcome? What was that journey like?
Sure. I mean, I think the first thing we had to overcome was how do we get this beautiful model that Mike and Colleen have built, right? How do we actually take that and put it into some sort of deliverable format? Because we can't have people just come and sit in the clinic all day and take notes.
Right.
Right. I mean, that doesn't work. They have that practice is an independent business. It needs to serve patients, and it can't constantly. Now, it is a teaching center. We do have the space right next to that practice rented by our consulting company so that we have events there, right? And so the doctors are able to actually come see that model clinic. But we had to be able to do the delivery by and large, not using their staff and their clinic.
Sure.
Right? They have another job to do. So that was the first hurdle. The first hurdle was how do we document all of this, right? And so a lot of that was up to Mike and Colleen. I can remember I flew up to their house, you know, with a camera and a tripod and, right, a hope and a dream. And I was there for 3 days filming, right? And I did my best. Because, you know, when you're in something, mm-hmm. sometimes it's hard to know exactly what it is you're doing because you're doing it, right?
Right.
So because I was new to the scene, I was able to just kind of extract data, like, you know, we need to film this. You know, we need to film this. Because to Mike and Colleen, they've been doing it for decades.
Sure.
Right. So you think that's important? It's definitely important. I've never seen anything like that. Let's go ahead and film that. Right.
Right there.
That right there. So and of course Colleen's incredible at being able to organize and show. She worked through creating our very first manual, which was this massive thick binder with all the stuff in it, the forms and this and that. And thank goodness she can confront all that. I was able to look on more of a global viewpoint. I was helping Mike with the videos and, you know, what staff did we need to hire? We started, of course, down here in Clearwater. With our very first office, you were one of our first employees.
Yeah. That was a big day for you.
It was. We finally got an employee. That's right. And it was a good hire. Here you are all these years later, and you're my COO, so you run the day-to-day operations.
Right.
That was the first hurdle. The first hurdle was compiling the material. Probably the second hurdle was figuring out how to deliver this to somebody and make sure we could get a result. And I can remember our very first couple of clients. Dr. Randall Ruland was one of them. He's still with us today. And there was a bunch of other doctors who started with us. And, you know, and Mike and Colleen coached personally for that first year or so, year or 2 years, so that they could really work out exactly what a doctor needed to be able to duplicate what they had done. Mm. And then once we got that documented, probably the next hurdle, like any business, was how do we get other people to do this?
Right. Right?
Because we want to scale. Right, and this is the challenge for every business. How do you scale? Mm. And we had the same challenge that I had originally in practice, and that Mike and Colleen originally had. Of course, you know, some of the doctors watching this might know the story, but you know, I had my practices running in Maryland, living here in Florida full time, and Mike and Colleen had their practices in Tennessee, living in Oregon full time. I mean, so it is possible. Obviously, you can't see patients if that's what you're doing, but you can run it if that's what you want to do. Right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we had to do the same thing here at AMI. It was how do we get coaches to be able to be so good that the doctors who are in practice would appreciate having them on the phone because they could answer just about anything, at least as it pertains to what we're doing, and would have a broad enough knowledge base that when the doctors call up with an emergency or a fire, that right. they'd be able, in most cases, to handle it. So that was probably the next challenge, right? And then,
Good. And so where do you see AMI is at today, right? I feel like it's been exciting. Last couple of years has been very exciting. The last 3 years have been Inc. 5000 list.
Yeah.
You know, where do you see AMI today? Where do you see the future of AMI? What does that look like for you now?
Yes. Well, you know, it gets more challenging every year to stay on that Inc. 5000 because you're compared against yourself. It's percent growth, right? But we are going to go for it. You know, I think our company, as you know, we have three separate companies that sort of function together. One of them, we were 280. Yeah, that was a good accomplishment.
That was awesome.
But moving forward, I have no doubt that we'll continue to be on that trajectory, because our goal at this point is to be able to scale this from the 500 or so practices that are currently doing this model to several thousand. I'm talking, I think we can have, I think our first target now is like 2,500, right? Mm. I think we can have between 2,500 and 5,000 practices working together as a cohesive network. Yeah. And you know, originally our business model was, let's just teach this model that Mike and Colleen have. And then you'd have all these independent practice owners out there who were doing this model. And that was a great initial goal. But the goal we have now is to actually link all of these practices, not financially. We're not going to own their individual practices, but to link them into a network. And the way we're doing that is we're working on a software platform, which we've deployed in about 30 offices so far, which is allowing these doctors to share real-time data as to what's working business-wise.
Wow.
And clinically. Yep. So what's happening is, you know, the problem that the independent practice owner has always had compared to, let's say, the big box retailers, like the big corporate America, mm-hmm. is that the individual on the ground who's got a single practice lacks data. They can't make data-driven decisions outside of their own little practice, mm-hmm. right? Whereas, you know, big corporations come in, whether it's a retail company or even in healthcare, you know, where they've got a network of hundreds or thousands of practices and hospitals, and they're able to look at all of their data and make decisions based on greater amounts of data. And anybody, right, who's an analytical thinker can understand that if the more data you have, the better your decisions can be made.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we're linking all of these practices via this software to be able to have real-time observation of data and trends and what's working and best practices, both on the clinical side as well as on the business side, so that these doctors can really optimize what they're doing in practice and have the best possible outcomes for their patients, to be tremendously efficient, so that overall, over time, I think if our model succeeds, we'll be able to bring down healthcare costs while increasing the results that patients get. While also helping our doctors succeed tremendously financially. And the reason for that is, you know, any group of doctors who could bring better results at lower cost, shouldn't they succeed financially?
I would think so.
They should win, right?
Yeah.
And I really believe that's what our model is going to do. And again, it matches, you go back to the late 1990s when I was in school and all these white papers about how the future of medicine was collaborative. Mm. Well, I'm not seeing it so much except in very few places, but one of those places is when the AMI model.
Right.
And so, do you see anything else like that out there right now? Is there anybody else like AMI or what we're doing in existence? Like right now, I know there's franchise networks and there's, you know, practice management groups, but is there anything else like what we're creating in our space? I'm sure it might exist elsewhere, but in our space, anything like it?
Well, I think there are other clinical models that are similar or along the same line, maybe in different disciplines.
Yeah.
We're, of course, mainly in the physical medicine space, okay? And obviously in the physical medicine space, we have a tremendous problem with drug addiction, opioids, right? I mean, that's a wrong model. And I know that probably makes some people watching this video cringe if they've prescribed opioids in their practice. I don't think the doctors are at fault here.
Right.
The doctors were misled as to the damage that these things were going to do. The doctors were not told how highly addictive these things would have been, or they wouldn't have prescribed it, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't fault the doctors at all, maybe outside of those few who were supplying drugs to addicts, right? That,
sure.
Those are criminals. But your average doctor, they were just given the wrong data by evil people, honestly, right?
Yeah.
There was a drug company, and I don't want to talk about the name of the company in this video. I don't need their attention, but
nope.
Right, like they knew things were wrong and they did it anyway, right?
Right.
And I think that's going to be proven out eventually in court. But so the doctors, in my opinion, were not to blame, you know, at all. I think the lesson we can learn as physicians is that we have to question and be skeptical of everything that comes across our plate so that we don't get fooled. You know, if we can take any responsibility for something like that occurring, it's that, right? Our duty is to the patient. And lives get busy, practice is busy. For many doctors, it's hard to make a living. Sure. And you have to see so much volume in some models, right? And that's one of the things, and that makes it hard to do your due diligence, but somehow we have to. We're just doctors, we have to, right? But that's one of the things I love about this model that AMI has developed, is that it really allows for incredible patient care. I think the way that most chiropractors and most medical doctors and most nurse practitioners want to be able to offer to the patients, I think that's why they got into healthcare in the first place.
I agree. Good. Well, I think that is a great point to end this off on. I think we're obviously we've kind of given your message, where you came from, what your purpose is, and you know, I think that was a great, I think it's a great story. I like your story. I'm excited to see where it goes. I'm excited to see where the story of AMI goes. And if you want to learn more, check out our website, amidoctors.com, and we look forward to interacting more with you guys and see you in the future.
Thank you very much.